Okay, good morning. Today's class will, I made a shift, although I said we were going to do visiting the sick, but I realized that this week is the Parsha of Vayera, where Avram showed incredible hospitality to guests. So hospitality to guests is also one of the mitzvah that goes under the purview of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, loving your neighbor like yourself, and V'alachta b'drachav, and following the ways of Hashem. So therefore, we're going to discuss this mitzvah of hospitality to guests, although I'm sure we all are very hospitable, but maybe there's a few things we will learn that we did not know before. So let's start with the mitzvah. Nice large print. I finally got it down. Okay, so the mitzvah applies whenever we meet up with someone who is traveling or who needs sleeping and eating accommodations for other reasons, we're obligated to do for him whatever we would wish others to do for us were we in the same position. Okay, obviously, you know, the world did not always have hotels and restaurants and things like that, so the mitzvah was much more relevant years ago. Nowadays, it's less relevant in scope because, yeah, a lot of people will take advantage of those opportunities. But still in all, there are situations clearly where people need accommodations and food, etc., etc. Now, some opinions maintain that we fulfill the mitzvah even when we invite friends to our own home who are not necessarily in need, as long as we are doing it for their honor. In other words, if a person would be honored that you would invite them to their home. Okay? So now, obviously, this becomes an interesting situation. If you just have, you're good friends with somebody, and you invite friends over to your house for Shabbos lunch, I do not believe that's the mitzvah Achnasas Orchim. I don't really think so, because that family lives two blocks down, they have a house, they have food, they have everything. So what's the mitzvah? I'm not saying one shouldn't do it. I'm not chas v'shom. There's an important thing to socialize with people and be friends with people. But, you know, it's not necessarily, I don't think it's the mitzvah achnasas orchim. I don't think it's the mitzvah hosting guests. I would think that a real guest is somebody came from out of town. He needs a place to stay for Shabbos. Let's say, chveis, a bacher's going to a shidduch. An out-of-town boy is doing a shidduch, and he needs a place for Shabbos. Okay, that would clearly be a mitzvah achnasas orchim, because he needs a place to stay for Shabbos. Okay, people come from out of town. That is genuinely achnasas orchim, without a question. So let's say, if you're inviting people locally, it would be people that you really would not normally invite locally. Let's say it's a family that's not so popular amongst people. They're not even your friends. But you know what? They would feel very good knowing that other people notice that they exist and invite them to their home. So then that would be the mitzvah achnasas orchim. Do you see the difference over here? So this mitzvah really, it becomes a little... So when you're in a bigger shul or whatever, not even a bigger shul, but you know, you have certain friends. Okay, you have certain friends. When you invite your friends, so you're socializing. You're not doing the mitzvah achnasas orchim. Achnasas orchim means you're inviting people you would not normally invite who would really be pleased that you invited them and that would do something for their self-esteem knowing that they have more friends. And that would be the mitzvah of achnasas orchim. So really it boils down to two scenarios. Either it's genuine out-of-town guests, or let's say you, in the summer you're going on vacation, or Pesach you're going on vacation, and somebody has their family or friends coming, and they'd like to use your home. And you're not there. And there's some people who get very nervous to let strangers in their home. Okay, well, that is definitely a mitzvah achnasas orchim. That's when you're accomplishing the mitzvah there. There'll be other ways to do this, but I'm just trying to pinpoint. It's not such a, easy mitzvah, because the opportunities don't come up that often, as opposed to the olden days. A stranger just knocked on your door and said, I need a meal, right? Things like that, it becomes a less often a thing. So therefore, you've got to be a little more creative in how you're going to apply this mitzvah. Okay, you follow what we're saying over here. So basically, unless there's out-of-town guests who need to be welcomed, which I don't know how often that happens, or if you're going away and someone needs to use your house, or the only way it really can be in your control, those aren't really in your control because you don't know who's coming from out of town. If you invite a guest who is generally not a person who gets a lot of invitations, and that could be, you know, people who have personal issues, whatever, they're not exactly the most socially friendly people or whatever. So that would be where the mitzvah is most to happen. Or let's say, you know, when you're living near a yeshiva and the bachrim eat in the yeshiva, so they really liked it when kollel families invited them because they finally got a real home-cooked meal. That would be a mitzvah achnasas orchim. So in Thornhill, it really becomes challenging to perform the mitzvah. You got to really keep an eye out on people that normally would not get invitations, and you give them invitations, like, you know, quote-unquote lonely single people. Okay, lonely single people, what do they do for Shabbos? So if they know they can come to your house and you welcome them, that would definitely be the mitzvah achnasas orchim. Okay? Okay, point three. The mitzvah includes welcoming the guest into our home, providing for him food and drink, arranging sleeping accommodation for him, accompanying him when he departs, and meeting any other needs he has. Any and or all of the items mentioned here. It doesn't have to be all of them. It could be one of them, two of them, all of them. Okay, it's interesting. In the olden days, people in the city can compel each other to bring in guests and contribute to the local Hachnasas Orchim Fund. Again, in the olden days, you know, the city took responsibility for that, and it could compel people to have a guest or give money for that. Okay, we don't have that nowadays. I'm just showing how important having guests is, that there should be such a thing. So nowadays, for example, where it doesn't really, you have a lot of people who come from out of town who come to collect money. Mishulachim come to collect money. So there are down south homes that are allocated for that. And these fellows, they stay in these homes for as many days as they need. And they at least have a place to sleep. I don't know all the details, but that's where that part of the mitzvah gets taken care of, so to speak, for you. When a mishloach comes to you for money, that's not necessarily hachnasas orchim, because he's coming to collect money. Now, if you want, you could say, oh, would you like a drink? Would you like something? This and that. Generally speaking, they don't have time for that because they got to move on to the next customer, as it were. But certainly, there are situations where it would apply if you take these, if you open the door to these types of people. For an example, let's say it's a cold, wintry day, and the person's at the door. He knocks on your door. You bring him in. You see he doesn't have gloves. Okay, and he's going to go back onto the cold. And if you look at his hands, they kind of look kind of wind burned and things like that. So if you give him a pair of gloves, that would be part of Achnasas Orchim because he's a guest in the city and he has a need that isn't being taken care of. You follow what I'm saying here? So it's possible to perform the mitzvah even at that level if you're providing them with their need. Or you could ask them, do you need any help? Do you need to, you know, so certainly they're going to ask you for certain things that maybe you're not going to want to provide for them. Like, give me more names of people that I can go to, and can I say that you sent me over? So that's a whole different area of tzedakah that I'm not going to get into today, at least. Fine. Five, the mitzvah applies to men and women in all places and at all times. Even a poor or sickly person should perform this mitzvah to the extent that he's able to do so, as long as he first sees to it that his needs and the needs of his family members are adequately met. You can't necessarily invite people in your home, and we'll see in a minute, if you don't have room at the table for them, because you have a big family, let's say. Also, it's important, even though it's a mitzvah to do something yourself more than to allocate it to someone else, it's important to train our children in this mitzvah and allow them to actively participate in this mitzvah. Okay, that's the general rules of the mitzvah. Now let's go to the priorities of this mitzvah. Yes?
I understand point three in welcoming them into Hanukkah, the mitzvah. Is it a different mitzvah, another mitzvah, to be thinking about who you should be invite, those young singles, whatever, that into your home? That's a different mitzvah? Versus, like, when we lived in Calgary, people would call us to stay because they were coming to the mountains. There was no way to stay for Shabbos, right? I wasn't reaching out to them. There was a list of families that were Shomer Shabbos families. But I wasn't reaching. Yes, we would provide them those things, but I wasn't thinking of them to reach out to them. That's a different mitzvah, right?
Okay, so let me see if I understand your question. You're saying when there's a situation where someone's calling you or knocking at your door, so then you have the mitzvah. Now you're saying, is there, what is this idea of people aren't calling you, no one's coming to your door, but what would you call the mitzvah if I now look into inviting people, looking for that?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly the same mitzvah. It's exactly the same mitzvah, and really that is what should be required in this mitzvah as well. And this is all what we learn from Avram Avinu. Okay, so and that's this week's parsha. Avram Avinu, certainly he had hospitality areas, and there were guests who came by, naturally, because he was like a free hotel, so people came by. Ah, so but with the beginning of this week's parsha, Hashem wanted to give Avram a break. He just had surgery, so Hashem said it made a very hot day, so now he had no guests. So then you'd figure Avram is home free, because there are no one's calling today. But what do we see that Avram did? He stood by the door entranceway, and he was looking for guests. He was looking for guests. He was running out to see if there are any guests there. So this becomes a new point to this mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. Because you have to remember, Hachnasas Orchim is predicated on the mitzvah of loving your neighbor like yourself. It's predicated on the mitzvah of chesed. And it's interesting, of the 10 spheros, the 10 divine qualities that a human being has, of Hashem's qualities. So besides the 3 higher ones that are qualities of the mind, but the 7 lower ones that start from chesed and then gvura, tiferes, etc., all the other 6 are reactionary midos, while chesed is a proactive midah, such as there's another midah of gvura, control. Well, control is, let's say, self-control. So that's a reactionary midah. Someone is trying to get you upset, so you have to respond to the situation by controlling yourself. Or someone's done something wrong, you must control the other person and discipline the other person. That's a reactionary one. Tiferes, mercy. Mercy is a situation where someone needs the mercy, so there's a reaction to that. All the 6 out of the 7 spheres are reactionary midos. Chesed is not. Chesed is not a reaction. Chesed is a proactive midah that is within a person, which means to say, you don't wait for a situation for chesed to come. Rather, chesed proactively looks for opportunities for chesed. That is what chesed is by definition. It is not, I'll wait for a situation to come, and when it comes, I will respond with chesed. That's not the way the divine quality of chesed. Well, I'm not saying it's not chesed, but that's not the divine quality of chesed. Chesed means, yes, you're giving, you're expanding yourself to share that good with others. That is chesed. But there's what we'll call human chesed that non-Jews are capable of displaying. And there's divine chesed that only Jews are capable and should be displaying. There's a difference between Avram and Lot, which, if you want to know more about that, listen to last night's Parsha class. I spent a lot of time on that. They were both acts of kindness. Avram had guests and Lot had guests. Yet we see that Avram's descendants continued to do kindness and Lot's descendants did not. So what's the difference? And this is a real major, again, I don't have time to give you a whole Parsha class, but I'm just going to give you the fundamental difference between Avram's chesed and Lot's chesed. Lot did chesed because it made him feel good. He lived in Sodom. The people of Sodom were terrible. Lot wanted to feel good about himself, so he's going to do something to take care of a need that existed. There was no hospitality. He will be the one to provide hospitality in a cruel and terrible world because it makes him feel good. And only when it makes him feel good does he do the hospitality. And frankly, when he gives the hospitality, he doesn't really care if the people he is being hospitable towards are comfortable or not. And there's ample proof if you go through the story there. Lot goes to people who look like they're malachim, they're important people. Oh, important people I have in my house. Not commoners. I don't want to waste my time with commoners. Avram, on the other hand, had people who looked like Arab idol worshippers in his house. Dirty Arab idol worshippers who didn't seem to be very popular people. So Lot does it because of the good feeling he gets for it. So therefore, that is more of a doing it for himself, more so than doing it for others. And if the others feel uncomfortable, it doesn't really matter to him. Avram, on the other hand, he displays divine kindness. Divine kindness is learned from the Almighty. Okay, the Almighty, it says, Olam Chesed Yibana, Hashem created the world with kindness. Now, if you think about it, you know, Hashem could have done it in many ways. He could have created man on the first day. He could have. And what would happen? Man would be gasping for air because there was no air yet. He'd be starving for food because there was no food yet. And Hashem says, don't worry, I'm working on it. Okay, he could have kept him alive. Remember, God's creating the rules so he can do it as he wants. He can create a human being who could be hungry and gasping for breath and says, don't worry. By day four, we'll have, or day three, we'll have oxygen in the world. We'll get it to you soon. And you know, and by the end of day three, there may even be a couple fruits and vegetables for you to eat. If you want meat, you have to wait till day five, whatever. Hashem could have created man seeing that he so desperately needs things. And then Hashem comes to the rescue. Oh, I'm the great God who will give you what you need. Now, when you do that to somebody, the recipient feels to be very overwhelmed and to be made to be feel very small and inadequate. So instead, what Hashem did, he created the whole world. It's amazing, ready to go. And he creates a human being. When he wakes up, wow, I got everything I need. What a lucky break. So what do you see from the way God does kindness? God does kindness by making himself very small in the picture. If you think of all the kindnesses that you have, where do you have direct, overt, in your face, it's coming from me, says Hashem? It doesn't. By the fact there's so many atheists, the fact that Hashem does not stick it in your face. Again, by right, Hashem could put a big stamp on every human being's forehead and put a stamp that says, made in heaven. You know, packaged in this specific area of God's realm, in the Republic of God. And now you couldn't fool yourself. Right? But Hashem does not do that. You know, Hashem wants to give. Hashem created the world to give man the greatest pleasures he could have. Right? And how do you get that pleasure? The human being works for it and earns it and feels good about it. Right? That's the way God designed it. You do mitzvahs, you stand up to tests, and guess what? You're going to get good stuff from me. And now when you get from Hashem, you're earning it. You don't feel bad about it, right? So now what happens to a person who can't earn his own keep? Well, now there's a chesed to help that person. Now here is the challenge of chesed. Here is the real difficulty in chesed in general, and specifically the Hachnasas Orchim, okay? Chesed in general is that the more you give to somebody, the more the recipient resents having to receive. Right? By nature, the way God created the world, person enjoys the fruit of his own hands. person does not want to get a loan from somebody. Does not want it. And as much as you're loving that person and you want to give to that person the loan, you realize when you give them the loan, the person is going to ultimately react in a negative way because you remind him of how incapable he is. You follow? And that's why it's not unusual for people that we help will hurt us. It's not unusual. And I've found that many times. If you help people, and the more you help, there'll be a time where they'll come back at you and hurt you. Because although you don't mean that at all, but they feel very made small and inadequate by having to always need your help. You know, that's a famous story with the, I think it was the Ger Rebbe, one of his chassim said, you know, there's certain people are really bad-mouthing you really bad out there. So Ger Rebbe says, that's funny, that's strange. I never did those people a favor in my life. So he's wondering why they're bad-mouthing him. So that's one aspect. And therefore, chesed has to be done in a way where the recipient feels that they're more doing you a favor than that you're doing them a favor. Okay? And that you have to really, where they don't really realize that you're really doing them the favor so much. It just has to be something like incidental, you know? So, although you may have a family, let's say, that needs a lot of food, you know, you have to find a way to give it to them in a way that they're doing you a favor. You could say, you know, I just did my bar mitzvah, even though you didn't, whatever, they don't know. I said, I got so much leftover food, I'm going to have to throw it out. It would be so, can you do me a favor? Can you please just take some of the food? I just don't know what to do. I have no room in the freezer. You might as well enjoy it. You know, that's a lot different than just coming up and saying, oh, you know, here's this food. Like, why are you giving me? Well, it's unspoken, but I said, because you don't have. You understand the point? When you're telling them, you know, do me a favor, or it's already there. You know, I'm already going to the store. Is there something I can get you? As opposed to, well, do you want me to go to the store for you? It's a lot different than I'm already going to the store and to pick up another item isn't a big deal. You follow? Or you know, whatever those aspects where you're making the recipient feel that he's doing you the favor. Or at worst, or at best, whatever, he doesn't realize you're doing him a favor. Let's say a guy doesn't have a job. So what do? You make sure he gets a job, but he doesn't know you're behind it. Right? So I've known cases of father-in-laws who have son-in-laws who just were not capable of making a parnasa, and they couldn't get a job. So the father-in-law behind the scenes goes to the third party, says, here's $100,000, find a job for my son-in-law. I know stories of that, right? And don't let him know let on that he got it. And then when the son-in-law said, I found a job, the father-in-law feigns and goes, wow, I knew you could do it. I knew you got the talent of this. And they keep a secret from their son-in-law their whole lives. Okay, now that is real divine chesed, because the recipient will never know you did it. Well, the question is, but where does my, the giver, where do I get that good feeling? The answer is, the only good feeling you get is that you're doing it for Hashem. So it's not contingent about how you feel about it. That's divine kindness. So Avram says, therefore, we're saying like this. Just like Hashem, when he, every moment, he puts oxygen into our lungs. He makes us work every minute. He is proactive in doing it. He doesn't wait for a calamity to happen. He doesn't wait for people to stop breathing to put oxygen into them. He gives them the oxygen before they ask for it. So, and Hashem is always doing kindness proactively. That's divine kindness. And therefore, that's the Avram was always proactive in doing kindness. And when a day was going to pass that there was no opportunity for kindness, he was really extremely frustrated that he couldn't do an act of kindness. But there was no need. What's your problem? What do you mean? I have to do kindness because God does it all the time. I can't live without doing kindness. That's divine kindness. You see, and that's what motivated Avram to have to run. Now it's very interesting. I just saw this week So Avram is suffering from a terrible after effects of surgery. He is in great pain. He's still looking for guests. Now, couldn't we say the pain is so great that just let it go? And the Midrash comments that as he's running to the guests, his wound is bleeding. He's dripping blood as he's running to the guests. He must have been in incredible physical pain. So how was he able to do it? So the answer is, but the spiritual pain he was suffering of not doing kindness was much more painful than the physical pain. That's something that only a real tzaddik could feel. The guy, he feels so much pain that he can't do chesed today. He feels pain that I can't act like God today. And the pain was so great, he's running around looking for a way to assuage that pain, that he can feel good spiritually, that he's behaved like God today. So then God has to do a miracle, sends guests down who couldn't normally come down, so he's able to do that. And therefore, what about the physical pain? You don't feel the physical pain. If there's a greater pain, right? What do they say if you have a certain pain, right? Whatever, a minor pain that's nudging you. So if someone punches you in the face, you forget about this pain, right? Because wait a minute, someone just hit me in the face. I had this little hangnail. I mean, there's a greater pain. So the same idea, if there's a greater pain, it takes away the smaller pain. So his pain of surgery compared to not being able to deliver in a spiritual way paled in comparison to the spiritual benefit he would have got by taking away the spiritual pain. So this become, I'm giving you a long-winded answer, but you gave me an opening that I thought was important to bring out. That chesed is something we look for the opportunities to do it. So back to answer your question, it's the very same mitzvah, but we could say, I don't mean this at all in a derogatory fashion, but if a person only understands achnasas orchim is when you get a call, then you're doing kindness, but it's not yet reaching a divine level, right? If you're making it your business to find opportunities that don't appear to exist, but they're out there, but you have to work hard to find that, then you're working on a divine level of achnasa sorchim. So that's something what you read about Heni Machlis Zichrono Levracha, who, you know, they didn't have to have 100 people in their house on Shabbos, right? But that was the divine way of doing it, right? They're always looking for people to come to their home who would benefit. Again, only if it's for their benefit, not otherwise. So therefore, to answer your question, if you want to do this mitzvah on a divine level, you'd start searching out and looking, okay, which people in this community would greatly benefit from a Shabbos or even a weekday invitation? You know, it doesn't have to be limited to Shabbos. I can imagine a lonely single person only has once a week to find company. So, you know, what if you're eating supper anyway on Wednesday? I'm just saying. So invite someone on Wednesday. Say, you know, would you like to come over for supper? We'd love to have some company. You know, whatever, you know, there's lots of ways to word it. You know, I'm just giving an example. You could say, well, you know, now that our kids are married, my husband and I, we feel awfully lonely. You do us a great favor if you come and spend a Wednesday night dinner with us. We'd love to have you share your company with us. Instead of saying, well, I know you're a Neb and you're this and that, and we're going to have Rachmanis on you, we're going to have you over. Not exactly. Make the person feel like, wow, they really want me to be their guest. They want to, well, that's really not your real agenda. Your agenda is to do a chesed with this person. But if you're going to let them know what your agenda is, they're going to feel indebted or compromised a little bit from that. So that answers your question, right? So really, there is a lot of opportunity. There's not, you have to make your opportunities for chesed. So that's what Avram Avinu lived in Toronto. He would, certainly be trying to reach out to all the secular people, be makar of them, but he would have some kind of a free food service. You know, I don't know where he would open it up. maybe downtown, I don't know. And he would open up and provide those services for people free of charge. You know, are you Jewish? Even if they weren't Jewish, but surely if they were Jewish, to have them come to his house and to know this is a place. You know, I don't know if there exists in Toronto. He'll know if you ever need a meal, you can just come to this person's house. I don't know if there's such an address like you had with the machlises in Eretz Yisrael. Like everybody knew, they just could just drop in anytime, any day. They would just drop in. I don't think that exists. So that's something that we all can work on. Okay. Anyway. And this fits into the priorities over here. Okay, section B, a top priority. The Gemara in Shabbos says, based on this story with Avram, because it says that after the third, Hashem appeared to Avram. Hashem was visiting Avram. Avram was now enjoying the dveikus with Hashem after circumcising himself. And then he tells Hashem, Hashem, could you wait a minute? I have a mitzvah to do. Just wait here while I go. And from here we derive hospitality towards guests, is greater than receiving the divine presence. Which is, at first blush, very shocking. The whole goal of life is to be able to be Dovuk Hashem. And Avram was being Dovuk Hashem at this point in time. This was the goal of creation. So how do you stand up Hashem and say, sorry, I got some business to do? The answer is, as good as cleaving to Hashem is, Hashem gets more nachas seeing you behave in a divine fashion. And by going to the guests, by doing chesed, that although wasn't necessary because of the circumstances, so Hashem says, I get more nachas seeing you behave as a divine being, as opposed to benefiting from the dveikus that I'm giving you now. Okay? And for that matter, you know, we are entitled to, let's say during Pesukah de Zimra, if a stranger walks into the shul and feels extremely uncomfortable being a stranger shul, you can walk over to him and greet him and say, hello, can I help you? Do you need a sitter? Do you need something? And we can do that. We can't do that in the middle of the Amida, because Shulchan Aruch says you can't. But aside from that, but you're in shul, I'm supposed to be davening to Hashem, Pesukah de Zimra. Well, no, there's a guest, and a guest is even more important than that. It goes further. Gemara says hospitality towards guests is greater than rising early to go to the Beis Medrash. Which means, in a case where the guest specifically needs the host and not anyone else to serve him, the host may miss tefillah b'tzibur or interrupt his Torah study in order to care for his guest. If the guest mamish needs something and nobody else can do it but you, and by you doing it, it will cause you to miss minyan or to miss your shir, you miss it. Because that's part of the divine presence that the mitzvah of hachnasas orchim trumps it. Now, obviously, when no one else can do it, though, if you can pass it on so you don't have to miss davening in a minyan. But if it's such an important thing, then that's how far we go. Now, and more than that, for example, we're lenient in certain specific halachas in order to facilitate the proper performance of Hachnasas Orchim. So a good example would be like this. Let's say normally on the first night of Sukkos, if it's raining, you have to wait a while to see if the rain's going to stop. And if it doesn't stop after a long wait, then you could start eating in your house. But you first have to wait. Now, what if you have hungry guests in your house? You've invited poor people to your home, people that are legitimately hungry. So therefore, although the halacha says you wait, no, the Mishnah says don't wait and start eating right away. So that where we see even certain halacha, we can't, you know, you don't violate a out and out halacha, but we'll be lenient in such a case. There's many examples of that. Great rabbis, I don't remember the names of the rabbis. There once was a rabbi who had another rabbi visiting him, and it was very cold. Talking about Lithuania in October, it was very cold. So the host told the guest, he says, I'm an older person, and the cold weather's not good for me. I've made a place for you to eat in the sukkah. And you'll eat in the sukkah, you're a younger fellow, you're healthier, and I'm going to eat in the house. And a few minutes later, that's how it started. And a few minutes later, the elderly rabbi went out into the sukkah and started to eat. So he says, "Rabbi, you just told me that it's not good for you, and therefore you're excused from the sukkah. Remember, if you don't feel well, you don't have to eat in the sukkah. That's halacha. Let's say you have a cold. You don't have to eat in the sukkah if it's cold, because it makes your cold worse." So that's what the elderly rabbi was saying. "Listen, the cold isn't good for me, so I'm eating inside, so I'm free from the mitzvah sukkah." So then a few minutes later, the elderly rabbi comes back in, goes into the sukkah. He says, "What are you doing in the sukkah? You said that you were free from the mitzvah." He says, "I'm free from the mitzvah sukkah, but then I remember, but I'm not free from the mitzvah of having guests. And part of having a guest is to sit with your guest and talk with your guest. That's part of having a guest. So I'm not free from that. Not feeling well is an excuse to not eat in the sukkah, but not feeling well is not an excuse to not take care of my guests." So you can see how important that is. The Chafetz Chaim, for example, often when he had guests Friday night, and he always would sing Eishes Chayil and Shalom Aleichem, but when he had guests that he knew were hungry, he skipped it and went right to Kiddush. And then in the middle of the meal, he sang Shalom Aleichem and Eishes Chayil, and they asked why. He says, "You know what? The angels aren't so hungry, they can wait. But you're hungry and you can't wait." So that's all part of the priorities of Hachnosas Orchim. Okay, moving on to section C. And again, this fits into the Avram motif, making the guest feel at home. We derive many of the, many nuances of the laws of proper hospitality from the hospitality Avram showed the angels. So I'm not going to go through the whole story again, but following Avram's lead, we should provide for the needs of our guests, food, drink, a place to wash and rest, enthusiastically and quickly. That's part of it, to show how you're so happy the person's there, as opposed to, "Oh, you're here at the door. Well, let me see what I could do." And you're just, you know, not too excited to see the guest and you're not rushing. The host should always serve with a smile, as if he's wealthy and has plenty to spare, and should apologize that he does not have more to offer them. Let's say having chicken. Say, "I'm really sorry. I wish I could have had a steak for you. Such an important guest like you. I wish I could give you a steak. I just wasn't able to get any steaks today. I apologize." You know, that's how you have to make the guests feel really great. If they need a place to sleep, he should offer them the most comfortable beds, even if that means displacing his own family members to lesser accommodations. So in other words, you don't have the guests sleep in an old mattress. You know, again, they tell the story with the Brisker Rav, the chesed in the home. You know, people think the Brisker Rav is famous for his great scholarship in Torah. That's true. They failed to know he was just as great in the midst of Hachnosas Orchim, was just as great. And that the Brisker Rav's home was known to be a home that anybody could come at any time. At any time. And there were times when the Brisker Rav would come home and after a really hard day, and he found that his bed was being occupied by a total stranger. And then what he would do is he would just find a way to just sleep on the floor. So anyway, and people in the Brisker Rav's home could stay as long as they wanted. And they could stay many days. And to such an extent that people were like strangers from out of town. They, you know, remember there wasn't Photoshop and all this stuff where, you know, Gödel cards. So people know the Brisker Rav existed, but no one knew what he looked like. Let's say you're a guy from Poland and you're going to Brisk, to Lithuania. They never saw the Brisker Rav. They heard about the Brisker Rav. They heard you go, you ask people, "Where's the Brisker Rav's house?" That's to get a good accommodations, but they didn't know who he was. So anyway, so this one fellow who's been there for 4 or 5 days, and the Brisker Rav walks in, and the guy figures that the Brisker Rav's just a regular mishulach, you know, it's nobody special. And he says, "Can I ask you something?" He says, "I don't know. They say you could stay here, but I've already been staying 3-4 days. And you look like you're a guest too. And I don't know. Like, how do you know if I'm afraid I'm overstaying my welcome?" See, he doesn't know he's talking to Brisker Rav. So Brisker Rav says, "I don't know. I've been here a really long time, and no one ever told me to leave." So it shows you the extent of chesed that these people have. And therefore, if you're going to have somebody sleep in your house, he should not be in an uncomfortable bed. Okay? So, therefore, when you're preparing, if you do have a room for guests, really, you should invest in not, it's not like, oh, now that I don't need my mattress because I bought a new mattress for mine and this is a junky mattress, we'll put that in the spare bedroom. And whenever a guest comes, well, would you want to sleep on a junky mattress? There's a reason why you changed that mattress, isn't it? So let's say you will have people sleep in your home. Those mattresses have to be as good as your mattresses. Wait a minute, a good mattress costs $1,000. I don't know if I got that much. Well, that's the price you pay to do mitzvahs. Right? I mean, that's like a small thing. Like you don't think about it. I'm just saying you don't think about it. Like, so you have a spare bedroom. I'll be for guests. So that spare bedroom sometimes, you know, lacks having some of the accoutrements that your bedroom has. So you got to realize, start with the mattress. So if it's a junky mattress, you throw the mattress out, right? Or you keep it for yourself and buy a nicer one for guests. But you're not going to do that. So what do? You throw out the junky mattress, buy a good mattress, and make sure there's a good mattress in the spare bedroom. Okay? 5, whenever possible, the host should dine together with the guest. Makes sense. Guest likes company. Now, you see, this is all before you had cell phones. And people just, they eat with their cell phone, and they eat with their computer, and they just, you know, they're just looking and everything's going on. So I guess because you don't have to come on to other people. But really, you enjoy a meal better if there's somebody eating with you and talking with you and that thing. The host should not invite more people to his meal than he has room to seat and food to serve. You know, don't invite more people when you know that means they're not going to get a really a lot of food to eat and they won't really be able to sit down. So always invite, understanding that. Okay, now some common laws of proper etiquette that really apply under all circumstances. We should never look at a person, especially a guest, while he's eating, nor should we look at the portion on his plate so as not to embarrass him. What was being said over his volume, when a person eats, they're generally not in a most dignified position. You know, when you stare at, you know, it's always never great to look at people, like to stare at people. But there is an idea of looking at a person. People want to have eye contact when you're talking to somebody. Okay? It's respectful to look in the person's face and talk to them, right? And if you're talking and I'm just, yeah, that's right, that's right. That's very disrespectful. So I'm supposed to look at you. But I'm not supposed to look at you when you're eating. Because eating is not the most noble activity. When you're eating, you are, you know, you're displaying, it's no fault of your own, more animalistic behavior. I mean, just the idea of putting food in your mouth, chewing food in your mouth, is not the noblest activity. And if somebody would be watching you, you'd feel a little bit uncomfortable. Do you ever notice that, you know? So when you have a guest, you shouldn't watch a person eating. Because number one, they lose esteem in your eyes. Because you say, wow, he looks a lot different when he's eating. Doesn't look as dignified. Even if he's eating with the proper etiquette and everything, it's not a dignified, you know, generally. And it makes the person look a little bit less important, and it's sort of embarrassing. Or let's say you're looking at his portion, like you're kind of looking at it and saying, you know, boy, he sure eats a lot. Or, you know, or say, why are you picking at your plate? Like all that kind of stuff, really, you just don't look at the person's plate. Don't look at the person's mouth when he's eating. It's just you keep the discussion, you know, unless you're talking with each other. But like during the eating part, don't look at a person when he's eating. Okay? 8, the host should be extremely careful to maintain a positive demeanor at the table, not to lose his temper or act in a fussy or irritable manner. The guest might think he's upset at him. And Bechalal, it's a very uncomfortable situation to be in a room, in a table when somebody's, you know, not acting nicely. 9, the host should not display sadness or relate his misfortune, since the guest might surmise that he's actually the cause of the host's unhappiness. Or in general, you know, a guest is not looking to give therapy to his host. Okay, next. Good. Next page. Rich and poor. The mitzvah of Masechta Zorachim should be performed even for a wealthy guest who can afford to pay for his accommodations, such as a rich businessman who's stuck in a strange town for Shabbos. It's a good example. Really, he's got the money, but he's in a Jewish neighborhood that doesn't have a hotel, doesn't have anything. Still a mitzvah, even though he's a rich person. We are certainly required to provide for the needs of poor guests, where the mitzvah of tzedakah is also fulfilled. Now, when you have a poor guest, you're compounding a second mitzvah, achnasas orchim, and it's probably also tzedakah, because he probably can't even afford to buy the meal, or he'd have to pay money for the meal, and therefore it's also a mitzvah of tzedakah. Now, sometimes you don't have the best guests in the world. Some guests are really not pleasant to have. So, a host should not be distressed if his guest curses him or offends him. Why? So what should you keep in mind? Since the merit of the mitzvah of achnasas orchim far outweighs any harm or pain he may sustain. So you got to remember, you're doing a mitzvah, and that is the real benefit. Again, you're not doing it for the person per se. You're doing it because you want to be a giver. You want to be like Hashem. You want to develop your closeness to Hashem. And Hashem, guess what? He gives to Jews who curse him out all the time. Right? Do not secular Jews also breathe, eat, and function like religious Jews? And even the secular Jew says, I don't believe in God. That's for idiots. Hashem still is letting his heart work and is kind, being kind to him. So you're no different than Hashem. So if the guest is a little bit rude, so fine. What is that? What does one thing have to do with the other? Now, we're not talking if he's going to physically harm you now. Okay, that's a different story. You don't have to get physically harmed. But it doesn't have to be, as they say, a geschmack, a guest. That, oh, I really enjoyed the guest. It could be outer up. You don't enjoy the guest. That's even a bigger mitzvah. Okay, on the other hand, point four, we should be careful not to invite wicked people into our homes since they could have a negative effect on the household. Now, we're talking about a person who, let's say, for example, he swears often. And you have young children at the table. Okay? And they're going to pick it up. So then, you know, such a situation, you have to avoid it. Now, either you tell the person at the table, please, we have to use a different language, or I can't have you as a guest, or whatever. You have to find a way to negotiate that in a very careful way. But if the people are really display really bad mitos, that will rub off on the family, then your family comes first. So, okay, you have all kinds of issues that you have to ask shilas on. So you invite secular people to your home. Where does that fit in? So you need to ask shilas, you know, as to how secular they can be. Again, if a woman is really dressed extremely not sneas, and you have yeshiva bachrim that are your sons at the table, you can't invite that person. That's all there is to it. You know, you have to tell the person, you know, we'd love to have you for a guest, but we have certain, what would they say, what's the word, you know, when you have rules of how you dress at the table, there's a fancy word for that, no? We have a certain, whatever, we have a certain dress etiquette at our home. You know, and we come home we dress very modestly. And if you can do that, we'd love to have you. And if you can't, then then you could tell them, if you're a woman, you say, I can go out to lunch with you at another time. Or you have the boys eat somewhere else. I mean, there's options, but I'm saying you can't compromise on clear-cut issues. You know, as much as you'd like to, you can't. You can't if she's mamish a prutza, and yeshiva boy seeing that, it ain't good for their neshamas. You can't, and then say, well, at least we're learning how much we love Jews. We're reaching out to them. No, sir. That you have to draw a line at certain places. The fact that they're ignorant doesn't mean anything. The fact they're not making brachas wouldn't be a problem. But if the person, you know, every second word he says is the F word, no matter where he is, whatever times, well, then you can't have the person be in your home. So you have to ask shilas and, you know, be judicious as to how you navigate that. All right. Number five, I already mentioned this. The purpose of achnasas orchim is not to grab the mitzvah for ourselves, but rather to provide for the guest in a way that is best for him. So how does that fit in? Well, let's say there's a real chush of a guest coming to town. You'd really like to have that person be your guest. you know, let's say a rabbi's a guest speaker coming to your shul, and he needs a place to stay, and so, oh, that'd be so great if I could have Rabbi so-and-so be at our house. You know, maybe we could pick his brain for some things when he comes back from the meal, and we could talk to him and this and that. But really, your house doesn't have such great accommodations. You know, it's like the bed isn't that good, and you don't have an ensuite in that ensuite bedroom. And there's other people with much better accommodations. But oh, I'm gonna run to do this mitzvah, right? I'm gonna run to this mitzvah. Well, wait a minute. But other people have much better accommodations. So therefore, if there are other guests with greater resources who are willing to host the guest and are more capable of properly honoring him, we should relinquish the mitzvah and allow them to take the opportunity. Okay, obviously, if no one else is available, then it's certainly preferable to offer the guest our simpler accommodations than to leave him out in the cold. Okay, now there's another thing you have to be careful. You want to be friendly to your guest, but you don't want to be a burden to them. So therefore, such as in 8, and this again shows up in the difference between Avram and Lot. If you notice carefully, Avram, he keeps mentioning to the guests, you know, Avram tells the guests to, he welcomes them where? To stand outside under a tree. Lot tells them to come into his house. Okay? The angels by Lot, they refused. Only after a lot of imploring do they agree, while Avram's guests agreed right away. Because how was Avram coming? Avram says, I said, I know you're on the way. Oh, you guys are walking. You're on a trip. I'm not going to bother you to come into my house because that's going to really be an inconvenience. But, you know, on my property, there's some trees over here. And you go on the tree and you have a quick bite and it won't delay your trip very much. Sensitive to their needs. So, and he says 3 times, he says to them, yeah, I know you're in a rush, so maybe just a little bit of water, a little bread, just to refresh yourself, and you can go back on your way. And he says, I don't want to slow you down. While Lot says, no, I'm going to make you a big feast. You're going to sleep overnight. You're going to, because it's a great honor for me to have guests. So again, he's using the guests as for his honor. No, if a guest is in a hurry, or insists that he doesn't want to trouble the host, they got to know if he means it or not. But in that case, we should not delay him in our homes. So therefore, you know, sometimes, you know, the guest is there. He needs a quick in and out. Oh, you want to get a chance to get to know the guest. Well, he's in a hurry. He's always looking for the point of what does the guest need more? Now, sometimes a guest may need, someone to listen to their tzaras. Okay. If they're telling you that, then part of being the host is to listen, to be the hand to hold, as it were. But if they're in a rush, let them be in a rush. Now, and this is the point, 9. Really, one who has the financial resources should set aside a room in his home or build a special guest room for the purpose of properly fulfilling this mitzvah. If that's something that happens often. This would be a real Avram Avinu type of person. And I'm not suggesting everyone can be on that level. You know, a real Avram Avinu type of person would go out of their way to build a special bedroom in their house and then would go out of their way to try to find guests who really could use and benefit from that. Now, you have to also be able to afford for that. You know, an additional room in a house could be very expensive. But that really is the optimal way to do the mitzvah. And again, 10, every community has the responsibility to make sure that accommodations are available for guests. 11, it is especially important to house poor guests at our table on Yontif or to send necessary food when that is preferable arrangement. I know my wife often, what she does when she makes her challahs, so she can make the brach on the challahs, so she's making a gazillion challahs, so she'll often have the kids, go to Mr. So-and-so's house and give him a challah for Shabbos. Let's say a widower, so they say, you know, give him a challah for Shabbos. The person lived too far away to come to our house, so if it was a certain fellow that for weeks, every week, she says, send him a challah. And the guy really appreciated it. He got a challah from that. So same thing on Yontif. Maybe you can't have a guest, but you can, you know, provide something that person could use and benefit from, again, in a respectful way. This is all based on a Rambam, and I think we're going to end with this Rambam over here. A person, Rambam first says how you should have guests at your table for Shabbos, right? You should have the poor, the orphans, the widows. Then he says a person who locks the gates of his courtyard and eats and drinks with his children and his wife, and he figure, oh, it's a Sudas Yontif, without feeding the poor and the embittered, is not indulging in rejoicing associating with a mitzvah, but rather the rejoicing of his gut. Guy said, well, it's Yontif. I'm having Simchas Yontif. There's no such thing as Simchas Yontif as there isn't a poor person at your table, or at least you've taken care of all the poor people's needs. So that becomes a critical idea, especially on a Yontif, that you should make your business to invite those kinds of people. That is what the Simcha of Yontif is, give other people Simcha. Okay, we're going to stop it here. Next week we'll get into women's mitzvah of this, miscellaneous laws, and then the midst of accompanying guests outside the house. We've got quite a bit more to go. And then after that, we'll go back to visiting the sick.